This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The two new cases in Borno State were discovered within days of what was supposed to be a major milestone for Nigeria. 2 years without a case of wild polio. It would have started a 12-month countdown to Nigeria and the rest of Africa being certified polio-free.
That's Chika Aduwa reporting from Abuja. Details coming up also. Hiding among migrants, Italian officials warn that defeated Islamic State fighters in Libya may try to enter Europe. And Nigeria's president says he will pursue talks with Boko Haram militants. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Zambia's incumbent president has been declared the winner in a hotly contested and very close election. Zambia's Electoral Commission says Edgar Lungu of the ruling Patriotic Front Party won just over 50% of the vote. He defeated his dearest challenger, wealthy businessman Kakandi Hichilema, by 200,000 votes. There were seven of the candidates. Hichilema and his opposition United Party for National Development received 47% of the vote. His party claims the election was rigged and will appeal to the Constitutional Court. This is Hichilema's fifth attempt to win a presidential election. An Italian official warns that defeated Islamic State fighters in Libya may try to enter Europe by hiding among migrants crossing the Mediterranean. Italy is now the main entry point for migrants and refugees fleeing North Africa, primarily from Libya. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the story from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
There has been some debate about this in Italy now for some time with the intense fighting that we're seeing in Libya. Giacomo Stucchi, who is head of Italy's Parliamentary Commission on Secret Services, says as Libyan militias, which are of course backed by the British and the Americans, enter the city of Sirte, the escaping fighters could pose as asylum seekers and board the boats that are leaving Libya and heading to Europe across the Mediterranean. He says the scenario has completely changed and the possibility of militants escaping to Europe by sea has certainly grown. And that's a concern because Italian police have estimated that around 10% of migrants who are rescued at sea manage to enter Italy without identifying themselves, often, as we know, moving through Italy to other European countries. And if we have, as we've had this year, around 100,000 arriving in Italy, that means as many as 10,000 might have entered Europe without actually revealing who they are or giving their names to the authorities.
That's probably a frightening prospect for Italian authorities, being that Italy so far has escaped attacks by ISIS.
That is of great concern to many Italians. Many Italians still feel that they are a number one target, with places like the Vatican and the Colosseum often being mentioned in videos produced by Islamic State. But the Minister for the Interior, Angelino Alfano, very strongly defended the country's approach today at a press conference, saying that Italy is doing everything right in fighting terrorism and prevention. He says the system is working. Of course, it's working until we have an attack, and that's the fear that most people have. I think it's important also to mention that the politician who has made these claims is from the anti-immigrant Northern League. He is on a commission that is obviously very close to the secret services, the security services, but this anti-immigrant party has been feeding concern and feeding fear and is very much opposed to the stream of migrants that we've seen landing in Italy.
How strong is the anti-migrant feeling in Italy right now?
Quite divided. I think many Italians feel that they're at capacity. Certainly many of the councils across the country feel that the additional burden of housing migrants and offering social services is not being equally shared, and some parts of the country are having to deal with a lot more than others. We've still got hundreds of migrants in the border town of Ventimiglia on the border of France. I noticed today the Red Cross was serving around 600 breakfasts to migrants there. Milan has more than 3,000 and is looking at new measures to house some of the migrants in Milan. So the numbers are still very high. You know, we've had 100,000 arriving so far this year, and we're not to the end of 2016. And there are concerns about who are these people coming, where are they coming from, and are they bringing any kind of allegiances with them that could be posing a threat to Italians and their security in the future.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Turkey's foreign minister is warning that if the European Union does not give Turkey visa-free travel privileges by October, his government may no longer stop hundreds of thousands of refugees from entering Europe illegally. Mevlut Cavusoglu has told a German newspaper, "We either apply all treaties at the same time or we put them all aside." The deal took effect in March and has greatly reduced the number of refugees in Turkey from trying to reach Greece. The agreement may fail as Europe grows more alarmed at a Turkish government crackdown following an attempted coup 1 month ago. One European commissioner says he does not see the EU granting Turks visa-free travel this year after the arrest of more than 35,000 alleged plotters. Twelve past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigeria's health ministry is kicking off a polio vaccination campaign in the northeast after two new cases of the virus were discovered there earlier this month. But the ongoing conflict against Boko Haram may slow down response efforts. Chika Odua reports from Abuja.
The two new cases in Borno State were discovered within days of what was supposed to be a major milestone for Nigeria, 2 years without a case of wild polio. It would have started a 12-month countdown to Nigeria and the rest of Africa being certified polio-free. But instead, the battle continues. The Ministry of Health, in partnership with UNICEF and the World Health Organization, is launching an operation to vaccinate 5 million children in the Northeast, including 1 million in Borno State, which is the heart of the Boko Haram insurgency. Children in areas controlled by Boko Haram did not have access to polio vaccinations during the past 2 years. In 2013, gunmen killed 9 polio immunization workers. The attack was blamed on Boko Haram. UNICEF said the connection between the conflict and these fresh polio cases cannot be denied. Nigerian Ministry of Health media officer Olajide Oshundu told VOA the ministry is working hard to mitigate risk during this new vaccination drive.
There's nothing the Ministry of Health will do there without the knowledge and cooperation of the military. So they have already been informed. They will be part of the team that will go around to guarantee safety of the health workers.
The issue goes beyond polio response. On July 28th, just 2.5 weeks ago, unidentified assailants attacked a UN humanitarian convoy traveling from Bama to the Borno State capital, Maiduguri. The attack prompted the United Nations to temporarily suspend aid operations. Nearly 250,000 children in Borno State suffer from life-threatening malnourishment, and around 1 in 5 will die if they do not receive treatment, according to UNICEF. Doctors Without Borders has maintained a permanent presence in Borno State since 2014, working to address malnutrition and diseases like cholera and measles. Doctors Without Borders media officer Shaista Aziz says security precautions slow down work.
We're working in a volatile area. We're working in an area where there's a lot of people on the move, so security is a concern, not only for us and for our teams, but also for everybody else.
Nigeria's health ministry has not offered a timeline for the polio vaccination drive. Officials say the important thing is to get as many children as they can immunized as soon as possible. Chika Odua for VOA News, Abuja.
Nigeria's president says he will pursue talks with Boko Haram militants. The talks would center on the militants' demands to release some of its fighters in exchange for the return of girls kidnapped from the Chibok school. About 300 schoolgirls were abducted in 2014. A spokesperson for President Muhammadu Buhari says his office will cautiously investigate talks, but points out such offers have been made before. Boko Haram made its proposal in a YouTube video that was seen yesterday in Abuja. One woman who saw the video confirmed the identity of her daughter, 15-year-old Dorcas Yakubu, who pleads for her life in the video. The video also shows a group of about 50 girls, some holding babies. The video's narrator says some of the kidnapped girls have died during Nigerian army airstrikes. Cameroon has been arresting or dismissing members of local self-defense militias in the north amid fears that Boko Haram may be trying to turn some of them against their communities. Local authorities tell VOA the crackdown follows an investigation by security agencies. Moki Edwin Kenzeka has more from Yaounde.
The governor of the far north region of Cameroon told VOA there is concern that Boko Haram may be trying to infiltrate Cameroon via the local self-defense groups. Governor Mijiyawa Bakari said authorities are screening the groups.
The dispositions ont été prises pour que les mauvais grains ne s'infiltrent pas.
He says they have taken all necessary measures to remove the bad grains from the good and to stop further infiltration that may destroy all the good works that the self-defense groups have been doing. He says they are organizing self-defense groups to henceforth work in synergy with security forces and denounce suspects as soon as they get any information. Bakari did not say how many of the vigilante group members had been arrested, but local newspapers report that at least 70 have been picked up by the police in a dozen border villages and that the crackdown is still ongoing. Authorities did not offer any examples of this alleged cooperation between self-defense group members and Boko Haram, and whether it has contributed to any specific attacks. Last month, Amnesty International accused Cameroon of arbitrary arrest and human rights abuses against suspected Boko Haram supporters. Amnesty said more than 100 people have been sentenced to death since July 2015 in trials which Amnesty says were deeply unfair. The government slammed the Amnesty report as biased. Abdul Garba, a self-defense group leader in Kolofata, on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, says the insurgents are promising better conditions and deceiving some of them to work as spies.
Vous pouvez vraiment nous envoyer les denrées alimentaires et les matériels pour le travail.
He says the government should give the self-defense groups food and material to boost their morale. He says that will improve our working conditions and spur us to work as the government expects. The self-defense groups have helped the military by patrolling villages and hard-to-reach border areas, but they say this is hard, dangerous work and they need more training. Inusa Haman, a member of a self-defense group in Kolofata, says men in this group have been kidnapped and killed. He says they need special training to be able to work from 9 p.m. to 4 a.m. every day. Cameroon believes the terrorists' ability to organize large-scale attacks has been greatly reduced and that they are trying to replenish their ranks by recruiting vulnerable youths in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Les dispositions ont été prises pour que les mauvais grains ne s'infiltrent pas, pour gâter le bon travail qui a été fait, pour que les membres du comité...
The group Human Rights Watch says it has documented killings, rapes and looting in South Sudan's capital by government soldiers. A new report says it happened during last month's fighting in Juba. HRW also says a camp for displaced persons was hit by shelling and other parts of the city were extensively damaged or destroyed. The United Nations has reported that at least 73 civilians were killed in the fighting. Jihan Henry is a senior researcher at the Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. She told VOA's Ayan Bior that the UN Security Council must push for an arms embargo in South Sudan to stop the flow of weapons used to commit some of the documented crimes.
The arms embargo would go a long way to reducing harm to civilians. It is more than just a symbolic act. Because it makes the procurement of weapons more expensive. We also believe that in this protracted conflict, as more weapons pour into the country, it just translates into more abuses against civilians. So that is why we've been asking the council to impose one for quite some time now. And we think it's long overdue. And some of the abuses that we documented in the context of the Juba fighting in July really illustrate the type of experiences that civilians get caught up into when there's fighting in South Sudan, whether it's in Juba or somewhere else.
And HRW found that there was a pattern of rape against civilians, as well as killings and lootings in Juba during last month's fighting. How widespread exactly was the issue?
So we were on the ground at a time when many organizations were actually leaving. So the movement was difficult. There was an early curfew, etc. But we spent long enough time to really get a clear picture of the patterns of abuses that were taking place even while we were there. So there are two issues of concern. One is that the soldiers were allowed to commit these crimes in the first place. And two is that the UN were so clearly unable to do anything about it, even when the crimes were happening so close to them. In terms of how widespread, it was concentrated in different areas. At different stages of the conflict during that 4 days, there were various different things that happened. Rape and sexual violence was part of it. And as I mentioned, it happened even after the ceasefire. So it was during the conflict and even after the ceasefire and in different locations. There were many of these things happening around Juba. It is difficult for us to say with certainty how widespread it is, to quantify it. But we could see pockets of town where soldiers were concentrated, where more crimes were happening. So, I mean, that's pretty much the way that we describe it in our forthcoming report. And we offer as many details that we were able to confirm and to check and double check and to document properly. And you'll see that in it we describe not just this indiscriminate fire and killing from indiscriminate use of force, but also patterns of targeted killings, often based on ethnicity, patterns of looting, including looting of prominent people's houses.
And Paul Malong, the SPLA chief of staff, is named in the report. The report says that Malong is, quote, substantially in control and in command of the troops active on the ground. In your own words, could you tell me exactly how much responsibility Mr. Malong has in the atrocities committed last month?
I mean, our point in this report is to remind everybody that he is the one formally in control. Yes, there may be questions about to what extent do people listen to him, but there are indications they do listen to him. So then why isn't he ordering an end to these crimes when they are being committed? Or, you know, is he aware of them and not taking action? We need answers to those questions.
That was Jihan Henry, senior researcher at Human Rights Watch from New York. She spoke to VOA's Ayan Bior. In Malawi, a 34-year-old university graduate has shunned formal employment in the city for life on the farm, and she is making a name for herself as an agro-entrepreneur. Reporter Lamik Messina takes us to Rose Farm.
Rose Chisowa waters her garden. It is a part of the 2-hectare piece of land she hopes will make her dreams come true.
I want to be one of the richest women, not just in Malawi, but in the whole world. That's my dream.
The journey here started 3 years ago when she bought 4 piglets.
And then within 4 months, it multiplied to 45. I saw the piglets, then I started keeping the chickens, and then I took in board the goats. Then with the profits from that, I bought this piece of land.
And then, like many other startups, she suffered the inevitable setback. Her animals got sick and some had to be slaughtered. She was able to transfer the surviving pigs and goats to neighbors' pens for safekeeping. But her fields buzz with activity. Workers cultivate tomatoes, maize and rice. Planting is underway to expand to vegetables. Rose Farm generates as much as $1,000 in income a month. That's 5 times what Chisowa used to earn in her old job as a journalist and researcher in the capital, just 30 kilometers away.
I'm able to pay my workers. I'm able to buy fuel for my car. I'm able to pay rent. In fact, I'm building my own house because of agriculture. So with agriculture, you can do anything, just like those people who are in the offices. In fact, maybe you are even better off than those people who are sitting in the air-conditioned offices.
She markets the farm through Facebook, where friends and new customers can place orders for eggs and other farm products. Cities have swelled on the continent as youth fled the fields in droves seeking for a better life. But high unemployment has battered those dreams. And in rural areas, subsistence farming remains the norm, leaving people vulnerable in times of drought or crisis. Rose says she's showing people another way. Loveness Kaumba is a member of the local youth group that Rose mentors. She says to us girls, we have learned a lesson that we can progress through agriculture and become even famous and respected in our community. Rose has 2 full-time employees. She also pays people from surrounding villages to perform day labor. It has become a safety net in terms of need for as many as 500 households. Villager Duncan Jalimela says, I always do piecework here to earn money to pay school fees for my child who has studied in class Form 1. And Rose remains ambitious. She takes us to visit her now deserted animal pens. She says she plans to not just revive the farm's livestock production, but to expand it. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Nsundwe, Malawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunday Side of Sports. And then tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Keith Holmes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Next on Let's Talk. Obsession in a relationship. What does it do? Help or hurt the relationship? Join host Sandy Shomari and his guests discussing obsession in a relationship. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Next on Straight Talk Africa. Shaka Sali has an exclusive interview with Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, to discuss South Sudan, recent elections, and Boko Haram. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.